When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Joseph Stalin's death was followed by a period of silent de-Stalinization. Some of Stalin's more brutal policies were revised after his death, and changes were made secretly and without explanation to the public as his successor, Khrushchev, not a wrestler, but Khrushchev, the Soviet leader. He gave a secret speech about cult of personality and on the atrocities that Stalin was responsible for, which shocked the Communist Congress. And it was too dangerous at the time to publicly denounce Joseph Stalin because of how lionized he was by communists, both in Russia and the rest of the world. And this week, surrounding WrestleMania 40, it can be seen as the beginning of de-Vincification of WWE. So we begin what has been branded as a new era. The Paul Levesque era of WWE has begun, as some of Vince's favorite phrases have been pushed to the wayside. But hello, everybody. This is WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York. I am now in the terminal. I was flying. You'll get exclusive photos here. In fact, you're not going to see these photos anywhere else. Exclusive photos of the eclipse, which I saw from my plane as we were flying over what I presume was Pennsylvania, as the solar eclipse around the world, at least, right up this path of the eastern Midwest, you could say, has experienced this eclipse. It didn't get very dark. I understand on the ground it did get quite dark, but it got kind of dusky up here. But I did see most of the sun obscured, as a fundamental and overwhelming force, such as the sun, was eclipsed by a much smaller force, which is the moon. But let's begin with WrestleMania. And this marketing exercise, as I spoke about with John Way on their post-WrestleMania show last night for night two, I think that is the narrative and the takeaway from a business standpoint, that this was a marketing exercise, a branding exercise, as well as it was normatively, a great effort to put on a really strong show with a really satisfying 2-year payoff that maybe Vince McMahon was against last year. And let's go back to Friday night after SmackDown, the Hall of Fame. We had The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, a member of the board of directors, inducting Leah Maivia, his grandmother, who was a promoter that took over for Peter Maivia after he passed, and she took over the Hawaii territory. But he did have the audacity to mention one person's name in passing, and we'll listen to that clip now.
And what she did, she was able to, for the first time, especially at that time, if you think about it, in the early 80s, there was a lot of competition. There was a lot of different promotions, as you guys know, but from Vern Gagne to Jim Crockett to Fritz Von Erich to Vince McMahon, they would all send their talent to my grandmother, and she had the biggest stars in the world would come to Hawaii.
So, not a positive response when Dwayne Johnson mentioned Vince McMahon. Not sure if he was actually even referring to Vincent Kennedy McMahon, Vince Jr., if you will, or Vincent J. McMahon, Vince Sr. But nonetheless, if you say Vince followed by McMahon, some negative reaction there. Granted, that is a Hall of Fame crowd in an arena, not a stadium. This is a pretty concentrated, hardcore fan base in the context of this. This is not the arena post WrestleMania traveling wrestling fan for pay-per-views, I think, that we saw in the pre-pandemic era. After the pandemic, I think most people would agree we have a more compliant audience. Partly that's because of the pandemic. Vince was still around shortly after the return to the road in summer of 2021, but we had a more compliant crowd. And in the cases where there was a concentrated, more hardcore audience, as in the case there would be for the Hall of Fame on WrestleMania weekend in Philadelphia, this was a more hardcore crowd, but not the hijacking crowds of the past. Nonetheless, booing there. Would that have been the case if they were in Birmingham, Alabama? Not sure, but there was a negative reaction there. And I want to jump to you next. On Sunday, an Instagram post was posted by one Michael A. Montaforte. Do you know who that is? Ever heard of him? That is Vince McMahon's personal trainer, apparently, who has an Instagram account. Vince McMahon, not too active on social media. His personal trainer, though, posting this note where he said, "Vince," it's a screenshot notes app, and he writes, "Vince McMahon was unable to attend his first WrestleMania. How quickly people forget that without his vision, there would be no wrestling or WrestleMania. Sadly, when a person is down, the people who say they love you turn their backs on you." His caption here was what, if I can look at the other screen and see what his caption was along with this. "Don't judge a man without getting all the facts. Things aren't always as they appear." Probably not being literal. I can tell you that it is literally not true that there would be no wrestling without Vince McMahon. That, in fact, wrestling did exist for in various forms, but in the worked form that we are familiar with today, wrestling did exist before Vince McMahon. Before Vince McMahon was even born, in fact, there was wrestling before the 1940s. WrestleMania was his creation, though. That's fair. But there was wrestling, and there has been wrestling that existed completely independently of Vince McMahon. But anyway, that's interesting. And maybe you get the impression that maybe, you know, Michael A. Montaforte, maybe one of the few people who are, you know, still in close contact with Vince. So there's that. This is in the afternoon on Sunday before WrestleMania took place, which it did later that night. And on night one, we heard the singing of the Star Spangled Banner, the United States national anthem. But as we know, WrestleMania doesn't open with the national anthem. It has, I think, when there's been two nights, but on the second night you have the proper song, which is used to pay patriotic tribute to the United States of America, and that's America the Beautiful, sung by such music icons as Aretha Franklin. Everyone remembers Vince introducing Aretha Franklin at WrestleMania 3. But we got here not America the Beautiful, but God Bless America, played by War and Treaty. A slap in the face, perhaps. I'm being a little facetious, but a noted difference that it's an unusual thing to play. If you're going to play a national anthem type song at the beginning of a sporting event here in the United States, you usually play the Star Spangled Banner. But Vince has always chosen to open WrestleMania with America the Beautiful. I don't know if that was the if that's true from the very first show where you have like Mean Gene singing the anthem or whatever, but WrestleMania has often opened with America the Beautiful and did not in this case. God Bless America instead, which is another one of our patriotic songs. Maybe that means nothing. But then Stephanie McMahon opening WrestleMania, and as a surprise, of course, we saw Stephanie McMahon seated next to Paul Levesque during the Hall of Fame ceremony, and no impression that there would be any additional appearance. That was her first time, I believe, on TV, certainly since her resignation in January 2023. So, sorry for the overhead announcements. Hopefully these aren't too loud, but Stephanie McMahon opening night two of WrestleMania, where she said these comments.
It's a good thing it's a little bit warmer out here tonight. When I was about 8 years old, I sat out at the entranceway at WrestleMania 1, and I have had the honor and the privilege of being at or a part of every single WrestleMania since. And every WrestleMania is special for its own reason. But I think WrestleMania 40 might be the one that I am the most proud of, because this is the first WrestleMania of the Paul Levesque era. And tonight we have people from 64 countries in all 50 states, all of us coming together from different backgrounds, different beliefs, to share this one thing that we love, that brings us all together. And nobody understands that better than Triple H. So, if I may steal a line and ask you a question, Philly, are you ready?
Okay. Thank you, Stephanie. So just some advice for anybody, really everybody in the wrestling industry right now. If you have not already, if you haven't, you're really behind the game here. Be sure to get your messages out, text message, emails, postcards, whatever it might be. Be sure to get your messages out in the direction of Paul Levesque, praising him, complimenting him, telling him what a great leader he is. Paul Heyman's well ahead of you there. But everybody's making sure that not only that they're praising Paul Levesque and he knows how to do this, but, you know, making it clear that this is the beginning of a new era. And I think let's really read into this in that she says that she's been at every WrestleMania, including WrestleMania 1, and had a part of everyone. But this might be the one that she's the most proud of because this is the first WrestleMania of the Paul Levesque era. But that does sort of move the Vince era down a bit, doesn't it? But maybe you're reading too much into this. But then the show ends with a cavalcade of people coming out to congratulate Cody Rhodes on his finishing of the story and winning the WWE title, whatever it's called, the Roman Reigns title. The real title, the big title, and everyone's congratulating him here. Brody Jr. is in the background. Wrestlers come out, but also at the very end, Paul Levesque comes out and shakes his hand. Bruce Pritchard is seen in the background as well. So that's not all, though. As Cody's leaving the ring, he gets the final stamp of approval from the number one WWE executive, WWE corporate officer number one himself, Nick Khan. Gives him a handshake and congratulates him as well. So we sort of see all of these small symbols. Stephanie McMahon returning, who maybe had issues with Vince. Maybe she didn't. But she certainly, in May of 2022, on May 19th, took a temporary leave of absence suddenly. At that time, the board was aware of the allegations of sexual misconduct involving Vince McMahon. Stephanie was a member of the board. One would think that she was aware of those allegations that the public at that time were not aware of. And at that time, she chose to leave. And then she came back as co-CEO and chair of the board. And then when Vince used his disproportionate voting control to force his way back into the company through written consent, days later, she left the company. She made a public statement that didn't feel like the whole story, saying that she was, you know, that WWE is in such a good position now that she's going to leave. Whether or not there's issues between herself and Vince, unclear. But she's back here. And Paul Levesque is definitely, you know that Paul Levesque is in control. That's being made very clear to the audience. And Nick Khan is here too. And we're making sure that people who are watching closely enough to pay attention to the very end of WrestleMania are going to see this is Nick Khan. And Nick Khan would be mentioned as well in the press conference that happened on Sunday night following the Cody Rhodes finishing the story show. And we had even, I think it's interesting that we had, which we did not have on night one, we just had an opening of the press conference on night one of Byron Saxton introducing, I believe that's what was happening, as being loaded into the room. But Byron Saxton introducing who is going to be appearing at the press conference. But on night two's press conference, we had Chris LaGentle at the desk, who I've interacted with quite a bit. He's probably the person at WWE Communications who I've interacted with the most. And he came and sat up at the desk, and I thought he was just like, you know, passing time and having chit-chat with people. But he was there to introduce, to name who was about to appear at the press conference. And then simply threw to Byron Saxton. I believe he was just doing what Byron Saxton had done by himself the night before. So it seemed like a very deliberate attempt to put a face to who are all these people who are the current leaders of this new regime without Vince McMahon. All these people, by the way, were there when Vince was there. But here are the new faces and the new leadership of WWE. And then we had Paul Levesque's comments at the end of the press conference, where he said things including that WrestleMania broke their gate record. We'll go through more of that later, but they set their gate record, social media records, their sponsorship records, they said were broken. Raw on tonight, he said, is going to break the record that was set by SmackDown the previous Friday in Philadelphia, both of these events in Philadelphia at Wells Fargo Arena, Wells Fargo Center. SmackDown set the record for the highest gate for a U.S. TV event. You have to use that US caveat because the record would be held by the London SmackDown that they did last year before Money in the Bank. But SmackDown had the highest gate ever for a US TV event, non-pay-per-view, non-BLE event. And then Raw is going to break that record tonight, according to him. He said a number of other things, including that it's the hardest thing to do to make a baby face. He's talking about Cody Rhodes. He praised Cody Rhodes in passing, said that he made his own road, referring to presumably AEW and the independents, the various companies that Cody worked while he was outside of WWE. He made a point to say that it's not just his era. People are calling this the Paul Levesque era. But he made a point to also praise and name Lee Fitting, who is basically the new Kevin Dunn, taking over at least many of Kevin Dunn's previous duties, who left at the very end of last year. Lee Fitting, who is the former director, head production person for College Game Day with ESPN, coming over to WWE in January. And sorry, there's somebody rolling a something down the aisleway here. But Lee Fitting coming in and making a lot of changes to production that people have noticed, these long shots. Maybe there's fewer camera cuts. And Paul Levesque said that there are more changes to production coming, much more, in his words. And we did have, so I asked a question on night one about Brock Lesnar, which we'll touch on later. We did have someone ask Triple H, who I think opened his question with, "What's up, legend?" And then asked him, give him a bunch of compliments, and then asked him, "How's it feel to be Triple H?" You know, I wish that there were a lot of other questions asked, including, what's the status of Stephanie McMahon now? Is she back? Was this just an on-screen appearance and nothing else? Or is she, who is the former co-CEO of the company, the former chief brand officer? She's worked as an executive for many, many years in WWE. Is she coming back as an executive? That's a question that would be interesting to ask. I think there should have been a question of, have you ever been to Paul Levesque? Have you ever been aware of any inappropriate relationships involving Vince McMahon or any allegations of sexual misconduct before the WWE board knew about those or before the general public knew about those? As we know, we've got four WWE corporate officers who were anonymized in the lawsuit filed by Janelle Grant in January. We now know who those people are, confirmed on the record by Ann Callis, who's the lawyer representing Janelle Grant. We now know that corporate officer number one, who allegedly had knowledge of the relationship, allegedly supported the relationship, did not have knowledge of abuse and these terrible assaults, which are described in the lawsuit, but allegedly had knowledge and has not denied that he and Brad Blum had knowledge, who are W corporate officer number one and W corporate officer number two. Stephanie McMahon allegedly having knowledge of the relationship with Janelle Grant, allegedly having knowledge of other sexual misconduct allegations involving Vince McMahon. So some questions around that in terms of, we do not know, it is not alleged at this point, that Paul Levesque had knowledge of the relationship or anything else regarding Vince McMahon and Janelle Grant. There is a Paul who is mentioned in the love letter that was published by the New York Post, but that is Paul Mangieri who's being referred to there, who is one of Vince's assistants. It was not Paul Levesque who is being referred to there. So you could say our reporting has gotten Paul Levesque off the hook twice, but I would like to have a give Paul Levesque an opportunity to clear it up if he chooses to say whether or not he ever had knowledge of that relationship in particular before the board learned about it in March of 2022, or more broadly and really more encompassing of the larger problem that is being alleged is existing and was existing at least in WWE. Did he ever have knowledge in his decades of working with Vince McMahon and within WWE? Did he ever have knowledge of any inappropriate relationships involving Vince or involving other high-ranking executives and lower-level employees or talent? And did he ever have knowledge of any sexual misconduct allegations within the company? I think those are questions that should be asked. I think the reason why, my latest theory, the reason why these questions don't get asked is because the media who are there, who have access to the press conference, don't really know the details of this story well enough to know what the questions are that could be asked, that not only could be asked, but would be in the interest of staff and talent, and quite frankly, the company, for these questions to be asked so that there can be transparency about whatever the problems are, which should only help whatever problems that exist or existed get resolved or have consequences that should be applied, be applied. But there's very few people, I think, who know what the right questions are to ask, at least among those who are in the room. I was not called on the second night, which is understandable given how many people there are there. Maybe someday we'll have a more robust wrestling press that is following important issues like this in the future, who are better prepared to ask questions that would be in the best interest of the pro wrestling industry. Or better yet, hopefully we have no problems like this in the future, but that's pretty wishful thinking. So I've got a couple clips here from Paul Levesque where he's talking about the new era. Let's listen to that.
Keep hearing it. Paul Heyman started, well, he didn't start it, I suppose, but Paul Heyman made a big deal out of it on Friday night. The new era, you know, talked about it being my era, all that. It's not my era. It's our era. When I say our, I mean everybody in WWE. The people that endured, the people that hung in there, the people that trusted, the people that over the last year, whatever it's been, gave their sweat and tears to get to where we are, because somewhere along the way, they trusted a process that led them to remembering how much fun this is, how much of a privilege it is for us to be able to do it, how great this can be. We all started kind of in a similar place where we just thought this was the greatest form of entertainment in the world, and we wanted to do it and work our asses off at it and make fans all around the world, or make a product that they could all enjoy and that they could love again. And so it's, while people are throwing my name at the top of it, it's their era every bit as much as mine. I can't do this without all of them. I need them to do it.
So here are some more questions that could have been asked. Those were his opening comments too, by the way, before any questions were asked. And I think it's curious what he's referring to when he talked about there are people here who endured and people who want to love it again. Is he referring to things being more difficult in terms of just the creative process and the production of the content and the performances that the wrestlers put on? Was it just more difficult and not as satisfying because of Vince McMahon? It sounds like that might be what he's referring to. Let's ask the question to see if he wants to clarify. And then he had some comments also before questions were asked about Stephanie McMahon.
So great to have her back home. Right. I get her home all the time. But like to have her back here, to see the doubt leave her by being here for the last few days, to see her confidence come back, and to know that this is her home. All of you, all of us, all of this business, it's her home. And as much as anybody on the planet, she belongs here. And hopefully she knows that now. So happy to have her back.
She belongs here, and hopefully she knows that now. So the implication is that she felt like she didn't belong there. Why did she feel like she didn't belong there when she said that the reason for her resigning was because WWE was in such a great place that they basically didn't need her anymore, and they were in such good hands that she was comfortable leaving, was basically her public message. So the question would be, you know, why did she leave in the first place? Was there any discomfort between herself and Vince, or why did she feel like she had doubt, as you referred to, about, you know, going out there and being with WWE again? There's a lot of mystery and even allusions to something here from Paul Levesque that's worth asking about. Not to mention, it's worth asking about, does this represent some return to WWE of Stephanie beyond just an on-screen appearance? Is she returning as an executive as well? So those are the comments from Paul Levesque on night one. And then we had this morning a 8K filing disclosing that there have been two agreements made. The first agreement is between Vince McMahon and Endeavor to buy 1,642,970 TKO shares. This is Endeavor, which has recently gone private. Endeavor is the company that controls 51 or 52% of TKO. Endeavor is buying 1.6 million shares from Vince. And that's worth about $143 million. So Vince's liquidation of his shares now, in terms of market value that he has disposed of, now gets up to somewhere around $1.3 billion. So that was one agreement, and this is all in the course of the last several days. And then on Sunday, I mean, the first agreement was on the 4th, which is, I believe, Thursday. Yeah. And then there was a second agreement with TKO itself and Vince purchasing an additional 1.85 million shares, a value for $450 million. So Vince getting almost $300 million in these two transactions. This second transaction was made on Sunday, yesterday. These deals will take a couple days to close. They'll close tomorrow, Tuesday, as well as Wednesday, respectively. So this will put, by my math, it doesn't say this in the filing, but this will put Vince McMahon's ownership of TKO under 5%. And That's important because the Securities and Exchanges Commission requires certain disclosures like this one when you have an owner who's making transactions and has more than 5% of the stock. The SEC feels that the public needs to know about these things. We need to disclose when large owners, significant owners of publicly traded companies make any transaction with their stock. The SEC wants you, requires you, in fact, to disclose that. He's now got under 5%, which plausible to me that that's intentional, so that, you know, you, it feels a little like reading into it too much, but it, this is right in WrestleMania weekend, and we're getting him under 5%, and now maybe we have to make no more disclosures in the future about his ownership. I'm curious if there would be any sort of ownership disclosure that would be required in, on an annual basis through the annual report or through the proxy. But in any case, whenever I think now, when if he were to sell the rest of his shares tomorrow, I don't know that that any disclosure would be required. A new era for the Securities and Exchange Commission. We may have seen the last filing memorializing and publicizing Vince's stock transactions. So a huge milestone for me. And then we have a tweet here, which has been confirmed by Fightful, I believe, and I'm going to reference a Fightful report in a moment, but this is from Ibo of Wrestling Purists, who tweeted that he spoke to someone from WWE who told him that the promotion is deliberately moving away from the terminology sports entertainment. And we have additional reporting here from Fightful that I'm going to try to look at. And as I pull it up here, Fightful asked sources if there was any hesitation regarding Stephanie McMahon because she is named as corporate officer number three. I don't think this report really makes it clear here what the feeling was, that it must have been complicated. The part that I want to get to here is that Fightful, in part of this report, mentions that there's other language here, that there's going to be no more banned terms or non-banned terms that you're not supposed to say. But one of the words that people should stay away from is Vince McMahon. One of those dirty words. This is from the Fightful Select report. One of those dirty words is Vince McMahon, who is not referenced, who is not to be referenced by name on WWE programming or featured in archive footage, if at all possible. Fightful was told that there is a concentrated effort from WWE to disassociate with him as best as possible. No plans to disassociate with Stephanie McMahon, obviously. Which really, I'm not interested in reporting on people's personal lives, but it raises the question of what the relationship is between Vince and anyone else in that company right now. So anyway, that's that from the Vince stuff, I think, for now. I want to talk about the attendance, which they announced. Let's jump to what they announced as the attendance on night one. 72,543 for night one. Or is that night two? In any case, WrestleTix has night one as 68,412, and the WrestleMania night one attendance was announced as what? 72,542, and night two was announced as what? 72,755. Suffice to say, there's a difference of a few thousand between what WrestleTix estimated and what they announced. It's possible that that difference can be accounted for by looking at everyone's favorite category when we're talking about attendance, and that's the suites. There are a lot of suites. I was in the press box, and the press box was really big, and that was not the only suite section, I guess. There's not a clear capacity for suites that I could find, but you can find the number of suites and sort of a range of what the capacity is. And suffice to say, you can find something like 4,000 people that could have fit into suites, which makes up for basically the difference here. This could be an honest number in terms of tickets distributed plus suite capacity or suite attendees. This could be a relatively honest number when we're talking about the kinds of numbers that WWE has announced, certainly in the Vince McMahon era. And we have seen more believable numbers, I think we could say, in the PLE era, Paul Levesque era, since Vince has not been around. So there's that. And I do think WrestleTix is a little bit of pressure on there too, because we know that people have a running count, somebody watching and counting up the dots on the map. So then from there, we don't know what the gate was. I was hoping maybe we would have a press release in hand by the time I was recording this. We don't have a gate. We don't have a press release with any more specifics about the business of WrestleMania itself. Paul Levesque did say on the night one press conference, though, that this was that they broke their all-time gate record, which means that they've reached at least $17.3 million in real-time dollars. That's what WrestleMania 32 did, $17.3 million in 2016 at AT&T Stadium with supposedly 101,763 fans in attendance, supposedly more like 80,000, something like that, based on tickets sold, which is just indicated based on WWE's very own KPIs, not my turnstile count, not public records requests, but WWE's own disclosures with their KPIs indicate that the paid attendance is somewhere between 73,000 and 85,000. And the middle of that is about 79,000. Again, so that's 32 in 2016. So this was at least $17.3 million in real-time dollars. Adjusting that $17.3 million for inflation from 2016 to today, and you have what's today's money is worth $22.4 million. Did it break that record? Not clear. I think it's possible it did based on looking at the ticket prices. It's plausible, but we don't know. In any case, in terms of real-time dollars, these two shows should be, are the two biggest gates, not adjusting for inflation, in all of pro wrestling history. So looking forward to getting the numbers. If WWE does not publish the numbers in a press release, you do have to report ticket sales to the Pennsylvania Athletic Commission. So it's possible we may be able to obtain some information that way. So there's that stuff. Snoop Dogg said 420 when he announced the attendance, because weed jokes are fun. Funny. This is a pretty well-reviewed WrestleMania, at least as of when I took this screenshot earlier today. Sorry for the announcement. They're not announcing the WrestleMania attendance. They're announcing where you should go for your gate for some flight. Let's look briefly at the live view of Cage Match here for all WrestleManias that'll fit on the screen going back to 2014. And this is through 400 votes, which is a pretty healthy supply of votes. This is at a 9, just over a 9, a 9.08. For night two. Night one not doing as well. Night one is at 6.7. So that, I mean, I've got to scroll, and we've got WrestleMania in 2003. That's WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. That's well over a 9. WrestleMania 17, of course, is well over a 9, over a 9.5. So this is, you know, as far as cage match scores go, for whatever you think those are worth, this is, night two is ranking is basically the third best WrestleMania event ever in terms of cage match rating. So very well received. I think people are just very happy that there was a payoff and Cody won, and it was a well presented, you know, a well presented match. 18,150, I believe, is the final count from WrestleTix that I was putting together as I was getting on a plane. So well above what they would have been able to put in there if they had not minimized the entranceway. There's a nice picture of it. And NXT Stand and Deliver doing over 13,000 tickets distributed for the NXT event on Saturday afternoon. And Raw tonight, as of most recent count, still in Philadelphia, at 18,159. That is the most recent count with a minimized entranceway. So there's that.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Paul Heyman was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. He mentioned Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was not featured in any of the career highlights of Paul Heyman, despite his many on-screen appearances with Brock Lesnar. So I asked Triple H on the Night One press conference what the status is of Brock Lesnar. Are they warming up to the notion that he might be coming back? I asked him, I don't know if my question is on the audio, but I asked him if there were any plans for him to return out of the Royal Rumble and if there are any plans for him to return anytime soon and if he's still under contract. So here's some of those comments.
I was wondering if you could give us an update on the status of Brock Lesnar. Is he still under contract? Was there a plan for him to return at the Royal Rumble at any point? And is there any consideration for him to return at this point?
So there, at one point, there was a conversation with Brock about Royal Rumble quite a long time ago. Right now, Brock is home, being Brock, and we'll see where that leads to, you know, from here. But the status is the same as it's been before. Brock is not gone from WWE. He's just home being Brock.
So there's Triple H's comments. He's home being Brock, doing Brock things. After reading the complaint, not sure if hunting is the only thing that I associate as a Brock thing. Fill in the blank there. So I don't know that we learned anything, but here's what we did learn about the Royal Rumble, in that that sounds to me like confirmation that there were plans at one point for Brock Lesnar to return at the Royal Rumble until he was referred to in anonymized fashion, but confirmed by the Wall Street Journal that it is Brock Lesnar being referred to as WWE superstar in the Janelle Grant complaint, as you know, being used as part of a talent negotiation to renew Brock Lesnar's contract. A sexual encounter with Janelle Grant was arranged, did not occur, according to her complaint, but allegedly was arranged with Brock Lesnar. He was like too drunk one time and there's bad weather or something another time. So there's that. Sounds like he's still under contract as well, but he didn't clearly answer. By the way, if you haven't listened to it already, we did an interview with Ann Callis, who is Janelle Grant's attorney. John Pollock and I did that last week, speaking for 15 minutes with Janelle Grant. The isolated interview itself, besides the rest of the Pollock and Thurston episode, just the interview is isolated on YouTube if you want to listen to that alone, or the entire episode is available. All that's on YouTube. And, of course, Pollock and Thurston is on all of your post-wrestling and WrestleNomics podcast platforms. Getting towards 45 minutes, so we'll see here. Getting home night one was terrible. Night two was easier in terms of there was a lack of city planning, perhaps, in terms of getting everybody home, at least on night one. I know John had a much easier time getting home on night two, and I guess I did too. No announcement here yet of where WrestleMania is going to be next year. The big speculation and rumor is that it's going to be at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We don't know, though. I've figured, you know, if they still hadn't announced it and still hadn't announced it. Remember, years back, they announced like three locations all in one announcement, which I believe were, this was the last of those series of three. So Philadelphia, L.A., and Dallas were all announced in one press release. No announcement yet of where WrestleMania will be next year. So maybe they're still negotiating a site fee. There's that. Speaking of site fees, WrestleMania 38 in Dallas, I did get some responses to my public records request from the city of Arlington. I have a question out to clarify that I haven't heard back from that I sent out on Friday. And this is a record. Well, this is actually not a response from my records request. This is a PDF that anybody can visit. If you're watching video, you can see the URL. You can punch that into your address bar, or you can find it on the Texas governor's website. And this is a document that's dozens of pages, but it's titled Major Events Reimbursement Program Report on the 2022 WWE WrestleMania 38, April 2nd through 3rd, 2022. And one of these pages shows what's called here the I got to look at this on the bigger screen. The fund request amount, which I'm having trouble understanding, but it says the fund request amount, the amount that was requested by the Dallas Sports Commission was almost $9 million, $8.957 million. A lot of that was from the state. Some of that was from local governments. And I'm not clear if that's what was paid to WWE or if what's actually listed here, if you can see my mouse, this definitely was paid to WWE according to this document, where we have here in this form that's titled Event Information. If you read here, it says, well, this is something that the Sports Commission, I understand, had to fill out. It says, will there be a fee charged by the site selection organization, which is WWE? Will there be a fee charged by the site selection organization, WWE, which must be paid as a condition to holding the event, including host fees, sanction fees, participation fees, or bid fees for the event? The response on this form is yes. And it says, if yes, what is the total amount of the above referenced fee? And it says $350,000. So that sounds like a pretty low fee if it's for WrestleMania, but I'm hoping to get clarification from the Texas governor's public information office. Because we know, why is that low? Because we know, putting Saudi Arabia aside with its $50 million per event, we know that Backlash in Puerto Rico paid $1.5 million in cash, plus provided $300,000 in-kind value, allowing them to use the venue with no charge. We know that Clash of the Castle was well over $2 million in Cardiff. And I feel like there are others, maybe one or two others, but they're escaping me at the moment. So $350 for a WrestleMania, not 10 years ago, but 2 years ago. That sounds pretty low. So, again, I'm hoping to get a clarification from my friend Greg Abbott. Or no, Ken Paxton is my friend. That's right. In any case, moving on. Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor, I attended on Friday night, and it was the estimate of tickets distributed from WrestleTix was 3,266. It was at the La Chorus. How do you say this? Leocorus Center. Anyway, this is a Temple University venue, and good show, long show, a little too long, but a Tony Khan special, as I told someone. It's a lot of good wrestling, but it's a little too much wrestling, a little bit too much in terms of time. There's a photo that I took, in fact, from when I snuck up to the upper level, which there was no one seated in the upper level except for a few people who, I mean, there was no gate or nobody preventing you from going into the upper level, so there were a few people hanging out there, and I was able to get up there and take a photo. They did have production kills here on the opposite side where the entrance was, which is where the media comps were. So some of that section, which you can see if you're watching video here, those were bordered off with caution tape. For the press conference afterward with Tony Khan, he was asked a question, by me, about talent releases. And we have that audio here, I believe.
Hi, Tony. Brandon Thurston, WrestleNomics. With the releases that just happened, you said it was for budget reasons, right? So, and that's the first time there's been releases for budget reasons. And in the past, there's been contracts that have expired, but you've talked about loyalty and wanting to keep people on until their contracts expire. I know there's been some exceptional cases otherwise, but does that represent a policy change for you? And if so, can you tell us what led to that?
Well, it's a great question. I think that this year I have been very active, not only in the free agent market, but in the production budget. You know, there are things tonight, like, for example, on one song alone, I spent a year's pay for most pro wrestlers in this business. And the budget with not only free agency, but production is very high. And also we're going into a contract year, and I plan to continue being very active, not only in free agency, but in the production of the show and producing great content. And going into this year, I have to look at where we're at, and I've really spent more than I had planned going into this year. So I really love our roster and where we're at. I am very supportive of everybody we have here and everybody that's ever worked here. I think I really appreciate everything they did when they were here. And this particular group, it was not an easy set of choices to make. And in particular, with this group of wrestlers we just released, I would be happy to take any of them back under the right circumstance. I have no bridge burned with any of them. And like I said, even with the boys, I disagree with the point on travel, and that in the history of ROH and working with us, that there hadn't been a couple times where they didn't make it and maybe change stuff. But on the other hand, I really like both of them. And, you know, whether we agree or not about that point of contention, I think it's regardless. I think that they were great. They were a great part of Dalton's act. I like both the Tates. I like everybody we released in this batch recently, and I have wishing nothing but the best for any of them. And, you know, I think for us this year, it's a really important year, and I'm really looking forward going into the media rights here to, like I said, being very aggressive and putting our best foot forward, doing the best wrestling we can. And I'm thinking and have good thoughts and wishing the best, and very open-minded about everybody we just released. But also I expect that there will be people that will want to come to AEW. I think really AEW and ROH were doing great wrestling, but also this is a great place to work. And I believe that everybody that has worked here, that was in that group, that are not with us, I have nothing but the best wishes for any of them. And they were all different circumstances, all different people. People are all different, and these are human beings, and I have a lot of respect for all of them. And like I said, they're all different circumstances, but for the company at this time, I thought it made sense. Thanks, Brent.
All right, we'll do two more, and we'll...
Okay, thank you. So... He mentioned in there also that the Tate twins, the boys who were a part of the releases, he was asked specifically right before that, a couple questions before that by John Pollock about, because by at that time of the press conference, the boys had posted their own side of the story with screenshots of text messages and this what looks like a confusion of communication when it comes to their travel plans. I don't know. We got a clear answer there about whether or not that's a change in policy in terms of, can you expect talent releases in the future from AEW? I would say based on this, yes. He said that, you know, this was for budget reasons and he wants to upgrade the production expenses. The reason why I asked that question, part of it anyway, is because as recently as World's End, the very end of last year, he had talked again about loyalty and sort of putting AEW over as a company that doesn't release people like WWE does in the middle of the term of their contract. And this was a departure from that outside of things like CM Punk, where people are released for discipline reasons, or somebody like BJ Whitmer, who got arrested for domestic violence. This was a departure from that. And when there's not a clear answer, I guess I'm left to speculate. This does seem like something that could happen in the future. Maybe not as often as WWE has done it at some points in their history, but it does sound like something that could happen again in the future, especially with the dearth of talent that AEW has. And this coming Wednesday, it was advertised that this coming Wednesday, this was on Collision, this was revealed that the Young Bucks will present backstage footage from All In London, and will discuss for the first time. So it's being reported by Fightful, among others, that this is really going to be the footage of Jack Perry and CM Punk getting into a fight. Just what's the best possible scenario here? The best possible scenario, I guess, is that maybe it leads to a match with FTR because they're friends with CM Punk. In any case, you're going to have a star who's not under contract to you, continuing to, you know, be sort of the off-screen focus of your show here. And maybe he's going to pop a quarter hour. I bet this is going to pop a quarter hour because there will be enough people curious about this to cause incremental viewership compared to the surrounding quarter hours. So looking forward to seeing how this affects the quarter hours. AEW has done a 0.23 rating in PG-49 in the last 2 weeks, which is the lowest demo ratings that it's done since, I believe, 2020, which is not good relative to where they've been. Still ranking number 3, I understand, on the night. So they're still ranking pretty well, but that's in terms of the volume of viewers. And volume of viewers matters because that determines what your ad rates are on C1, C2, C3, etc. The fewer viewers you have, the fewer impressions you have, the lower your ad revenue is, and vice versa when it's higher. So the best case scenario here is that it improves at least a quarter hour, which improves the average of the show. And a lot of people talk about CM Punk for another week, I guess. If it doesn't do a great quarter hour, well, it's it looks like a desperate attempt to get attention. And in either case, it's a situation where the most interesting stories in AEW are those that happen off screen, whether that's Cody Rhodes leaving AEW in 2022, whether that's whatever was going on with MJF over Double or Nothing weekend in 2022, whether that's CM Punk getting into a fight with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega with Ace Steel and Punk's dog involved, which was off screen, and there was never a match involving any of them. And there's not going to be a match involving any of them anytime soon, despite this great angle that's going to be shot this coming Wednesday. Or whether it was the fight involving CM Punk and Jack Perry at All In 2023. So all of that intrigue is happening off screen for AEW. And there's no match to build to get to it. Perhaps that's the rationalization or justification here, is that maybe, well, this is obviously going to lead to, there's going to be anyway, I don't know if it's going to lead to, but there's going to be an FTR and Young Bucks match as part of their tag team tournament. So there's that. And courtesy of Python coding, we have what is by cage matches count, the wrestler who had the most matches for WrestleMania week within the vicinity of Philadelphia. I believe this is within a 50-mile radius. Yes, I busted out longitude and latitude. Fortunately, I did this code last year, so I'm just reusing it. Marcus Mathers had 10 matches throughout the week. Second is Speedball Mike Bailey, who I think was the leader last year, with 9. Gringo Loco with 8. One Man Like DeRees with 7, and Jimmy Lloyd, Dan Wilson, Massa Slamovich, and Jaden Newman all with 6. And there's a number of others who had 5 and had 4 and so forth. So those are the big prolific wrestlers for WrestleMania weekend. Of course, those are independent wrestlers. So I think that's it. That's all I've got for this week. I'm finally going to leave the airport and go home. Thanks for bearing with this airport experience. Sorry for the loud noises that you've heard from the overhead announcer here at the airport. But you know, thanks for listening to WrestleNomics Radio and for supporting. And of course, this is free this week and this week only. And it will be behind the paywall next week and the week after that and the week after that until it's the first week of the month again. This is free. The first episode, usually Sunday, the first Sunday of every month, and then it's for subscribers after that. And in addition to the WrestleNomics radio show every week, you also get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You get access to all of my TV ratings reports, anything else I put behind the paywall, including quarter hours and things of that nature, slides to this podcast, and all of that. And thanks again to our subscribers, which, by the way, as I noted on Twitter, we have hit 700 subscribers, and I think we're still hovering over that mark. As we continue to grow here, nothing but up and to the right for WrestleNomics on Patreon at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, which is, that's right, by the way, that's how you can subscribe here. So I appreciate everybody subscribing. Patreon, of course, is the vast majority of the WrestleNomics business, and it allows me to do things like this where I'm able to go to Philadelphia and ask a question or two or one at a press conference, which is something that at least a subset of people are yelling loudly about. So I hope I've done a good enough job, and I appreciate everybody who supports WrestleNomics in whatever way. It all trickles down to monetization one way or another and supports and allows this to happen. So thanks to everybody supporting. I'm going to get an Uber now on your dime. Thanks.